Good evening. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse, and you are listening to the Elchar Chronicles. I'm your host, Karen Elchar. This program chronicles issues of law and order and our local justice system, the environment, and indigenous issues with special guests that dig deep into topics less talked about here in the Lehigh Valley. This evening, our topic is the recently issued Penn Environment Report on Microplastics in Pennsylvania, a Survey of Waterways, including several waterways in Lehigh County. We'll discuss the microplastics issue, the report findings, and the recommendations to address the issue. I'm pleased to welcome my guests, Farron Savitz, zero waste advocate with Penn Environment Philadelphia, working to reduce plastic waste in Pennsylvania and protect our parks and open spaces, and Dr. John Sigliano, director of environmental conservation at Cedar Crest College. My thanks to both of you for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
So plastics is everywhere and in everything. It's used in packaging, food service products, and clothing. And plastic pollution is an issue that Pennsylvania faces. For example, in a single year, the Philadelphia Water Department removes 44 tons of trash from a 32-mile stretch of the Schuylkill and Delaware Rivers, 56% of which is plastic waste. So let's start with the basics. What are microplastics and how are they generated? Farron, would you like to make a few comments and then we'll ask the professor to chime in?
Sure. Well, at its core, a microplastic is a really small piece of plastic. It's any plastic less than 5 millimeters in any dimension, length, width, height. And they sort of fall into two broad categories. A lot of them are broken down pieces of larger plastics. If you think about a plastic bag, a plastic bottle, or even your clothing, if it's made out of synthetic fibers, over time, those don't biodegrade. They just turn into smaller and smaller pieces of plastic. But there are also microplastics made to be that small. There are things called nurdles, which are the raw feedstock that makes plastic products. There are microbeads that have been used in cosmetic products. And then there are things like glitter, which is actually a form of microplastic.
John, comments?
Yeah, that's a really good description of microplastics. And it really needs to be emphasized that and appreciated how small these plastics really are. 5 millimeters is barely macroscopic. You can barely see it with your naked eye. And that is a really important reason why they've become such an environmental issue. And the only other thing I would like to add is that when we look at microplastics, unfortunately, we often see microfibers, small little pieces of thread, as being the most abundant microplastic in the environment. And that is found mainly due to shedding of fibers from clothing when we put them in our washing machines and our dryers. So even if you are wearing recycled polar fleece because you think it's great for the environment, we're finding out now that a lot of the microfibers we find in waterways, in marine ecosystems, but also in the air, are coming from these fibers.
And why should the public care about microplastics? What's the impact to people? I'll start with John.
Sure. We breathe in microplastics, we drink microplastics, we ingest microplastics when we eat food. So just the fact that we're having these small, tiny pieces of plastic in our bodies should be worrisome. And we're finding microplastics in human blood, in human milk, in tissue. And one of the things that we need to be worried about microplastics is that microplastics can take on these persistent toxins in the environment. And if they're in our bodies and they have absorbed these toxins, we have to be concerned about these toxins being introduced into our bodies.
Farron, any comments?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great summary. But to put a fine point on the health issues, a lot of those chemicals that are either in the plastic that are innate or the chemicals that plastics and especially microplastics absorb from the environment, they carry serious health implications. They can disrupt our hormones. A lot of them are endocrine disrupting chemicals. They can cause reproductive issues, birth disorders. They've been linked to certain types of cancer. And there are a ton of different pathways. As John said, we're eating them, we're breathing them, we're drinking them. Wildlife are consuming microplastics too, and we sit at the top of the food chain, so they often bioaccumulate up to us. The World Wildlife Fund estimates that every week, just from living your life, you're ingesting about 5 grams of plastic. And that's about the weight of a plastic bag. So if you think about it, we're eating, breathing, and drinking in a plastic bag every week, and that's not meant to be in our bodies, and that carries chemicals. And there's still a lot of research being done, but the picture isn't great.
So how widespread is the problem? Farron, we'll start with you.
Well, simply put, microplastics are everywhere. Researchers have found them in the deepest parts of the ocean. They've been found on Mount Everest. As John said, they're finding them in our bodies, in our lung tissue. They've been finding them in our blood, in our stool. It's been found in human placenta. They've been found in waterways all around the world. At Penn Environment, we've tested over 100 rivers, lakes, and streams across Pennsylvania. And, well, we're finding microplastics everywhere. There's not really a place they haven't touched yet.
I was also reading they've already found microplastics in the Arctic and the Antarctic. Mm-hmm. So it was a big news article at one point regarding the Antarctic area as well. John, any additional comments?
Sure. I can speak to some of the work that I've been doing on my research for microplastics. I'm looking at the distribution of microplastics in the Gulf of Maine. Most of my field work is done up in Acadia National Park, which is a fairly, you know, pristine part of the world. And we're finding microplastics in the water. We're finding microplastics in all of the organisms we've tested. I've taken students to fairly remote places, remote island in Belize, fairly remote location in the Peruvian Amazon, and we've looked for microplastics, and everywhere we've looked, we've found them.
So let's turn to the Penn Environment report itself. So Farron, you led the project. Talk about your team, the methodology you employed in analyzing microplastics, particularly in the Pennsylvania waterways.
So our most recent project, testing for microplastics, was a follow-up to an earlier report. And for this project, we wanted to look at the cleanest, most pristine waterways all around Pennsylvania. So Penn Environment staff, our volunteers, partners all around the state, collected samples from 50 rivers and streams classified as either exceptional value, high quality, or class A cold water trout. So these are sort of the waterways that have to hit certain criteria. They're the least polluted, the best maintained. They're sort of the best of the best we have in the state, because we thought if our cleanest, most pristine streams have microplastics in them, then this truly is a problem that is everywhere. So we sampled 50 of these waterways and then tested the samples at the Academy of Natural Sciences in Philadelphia. Working in their labs. It's sort of a citizen science methodology. We wanted to make sure this project was accessible for anyone, that it could be replicated in your own local stream. We would filter the water samples, look at the filters under a microscope, and then see what types of microplastics were present. If there were microplastics present, which sadly, every waterway had microplastics in it. And that's the project.
And so my particular interest, obviously, is Lehigh County. And you investigated, you analyzed 3 separate waterways here in Lehigh County. Can you address particular things you might have found in our own waterways here?
Sure. We took samples from 2 waterways in the county itself, the Little Lehigh and Saucon Creek. We also did several waterways that run through the county or are in the Lehigh Valley in general, like the Bushkill Creek, Little Bushkill, Saucony. We did the Lehigh River, but further north, where it's a bit cleaner than when it runs through the valley itself. And again, we found microplastics in all of them. Some waterways, like the Lehigh Valley, we found 3 of the 4 types of microplastics we were testing for. Microplastic fibers, like from synthetic clothing or other textiles, microplastic film from flexible plastics like packaging, or a plastic bag, and then fragments, things like broken down pieces of larger plastics. Not all the waterways had each type of plastic. Saucon Creek didn't have microplastic fragments in it. We only found film and fibers. But luckily, none of the waterways we tested in the Lehigh Valley had microbeads in them, which is a good sign since microbeads were outlawed from several cosmetic products a couple years ago. So it's showing that maybe if we get rid of certain types of plastic, then they stop becoming pollution and they stop becoming a problem.
And so, again, one of my concerns was the Little Lehigh. We do have here in Allentown, we have a trout nursery. The nursery itself, those beds are spring water fed. And so, therefore, when the trout fingerlings come in, they're placed in spring water fed beds. They grow, and then they're eventually released into the Little Lehigh. My knowledge, from what I understand, we have one of the few remaining natural spawning trout creeks, which is the Little Lehigh Creek. And so when you do your sampling of, for example, like the Little Lehigh, are you doing it, again, I'll use the example of the trout nursery. Do you do it at the beginning of that creek and then further out as well? So, for example, we have the Little Lehigh at the trout nursery. If you follow that through, you hit Bogart's Covered Bridge, and then it eventually goes into the Lehigh River. It empties. So how often or how many times do you actually analyze or take samples for one particular waterway?
For this project, just because we are trying to get a survey of 50 waterways all around the state, we only took samples at one point in time. So for the Little Lehigh, we got them from around the covered bridge. We drew six samples from that location, sort of within a couple feet of each other. We tried not to take too many samples just from one spot in case we were kicking up silt or mud or anything. But we took it from the general same location on one day. Those six samples were what we tested in the lab for that waterway. We didn't come back to it a second time or test it throughout the year, but I'm sure if we did, we'd likely find microplastics again.
So within that short distance, let's just say, from spring-fed water going into the Little Lehigh, on that short distance going to the covered bridge, you found three of the four microplastics types.
Yeah, we found three of the four. The only one we didn't find were microbeads, but the other three were present. And that's something that's common in a lot of waterways all around the state, because it's not just about the presence of visible litter or macroplastics along the waterway. These microplastics can get carried by the air. They get washed into our waterways through our laundry or through the plumbing. There are so many different ways they can get into our waterways through runoff, stormwater runoff. So essentially, they're so small, it's easy for them to travel around, and they're polluting everywhere. Mm-hmm. We even sampled and tested tap water from Allentown, Easton, and Bethlehem, and found microplastics in each of the different sets of tap water. So it's certainly a very widespread problem.
John, do you want to make a comment?
I had a student a few years back sampling for microplastics, and we sampled bottled water, we sampled tap water, and we found microplastics in every water source we looked at. But I think what the point Farron was making is really important, because these microplastics are so small, they get everywhere. And that's why we find it in the Antarctic and the Arctic. When we do our surveys and we follow a similar protocol that Farron does, we always put out a blank piece of filter paper in order to determine if there's any contamination so that we can remove it, subtract that from a sample so that we know what we actually got from whatever we're sampling, the water source or the organism. And this is just a wet piece of filter paper that we put out on our lab bench. And we always find, not always, but usually find microplastics in that sample, which means they came out of the air. So you don't need a single source for microplastics. It's everywhere.
It permeates, yeah.
Yep, everywhere.
So we're going to take a short break. You're listening to the Elchar Chronicles with my guests, Farron Savitz, Zero Waste Advocate with Penn Environment Philadelphia, and Dr. John Sigliano, Director of Biodiversity and Conservation Biology at Cedar Crest College, discussing the recently released report on microplastics in Pennsylvania, a survey of waterways. Do stay tuned.
Did you know that your phone is a radio? You can tune in to WDIY anywhere on the go with WDIY's phone app. Download for free from the Apple or Google store, and your phone will become your trusted radio. The easy-to-use app lets you listen to WDIY on your phone live and access your favorite music shows on demand. Download and share the WDIY app with your friends and family and introduce them to Many Choices, Real Voices.
When the world changes, turn to NPR for live updates on what's happening. We keep you connected each and every day, a click or tap on your phone away. Go to the station's website or npr.org.
Welcome back to the Elchar Chronicles. We are talking with Farron Savitz of Penn Environment Philadelphia and Dr. John Sigliano, Professor and Director of Environmental Conservation at Cedar Crest College. So prior to the break, we were discussing the recent survey and findings regarding microplastics in Pennsylvania waterways and the impact on marine life as those waters flow into perhaps the Atlantic Ocean and then beyond. So, John, in your capacity as faculty in the Science and Biology Department at Cedar Crest College, you've provided marine biology study opportunities for your students in the Caribbean and elsewhere for a number of years. What discoveries have you made on the impact of plastics on, or microplastics on, marine life?
Sure. So I've been fortunate to have taken students to some pretty remote places throughout the Caribbean. And the one thing that really strikes me always and my students is that it doesn't matter where we are. We find large macroplastics on all the beaches, even the most remote islands. Most of these the plastics that we find on the islands actually do not come from the island itself. They're washed up on shore. And wherever we've looked for microplastics, we've found it. One of the questions we're asking in my lab is how microplastics move through the marine food chain. And there's been quite a few studies showing that they do move through the food chain. They start in the filter feeders, and then they move into their predators when they're eaten, and then so on and so forth. And as Farron mentioned earlier, they can eventually get into us. And what we're finding, what the effects of this for the marine life is that they will affect the survival and reproduction of marine species. And as marine species are affected, eventually that will move through the food chain, through the ecosystem, and then we should start to see large-scale ecosystem effects, which could have, you know, really serious consequences for these marine ecosystems and ultimately serious effects for us as well.
Can you give a specific example of something that you found?
Well, we're still pretty early in our research for how they move through marine food webs. But we've found so far when we feed these fluorescent microplastics to marine organisms, the filter feeders like clams and oysters readily take them up. And we can find large amounts of them in these organisms. And when you feed them to their predator, we found microplastics in them as well. But right now, I think the most striking result we've had from our research is that we find them everywhere. So when we sample oysters and clams and mussels and crabs that we collect from the wild, we find microplastics in them. And for filter feeders like clams and mussels, filter seawater for their food, that's an easy way to see how microplastics get into them. But for other organisms like the predators, they're not ingesting microplastics directly, so the only way they can get them is from eating their prey. How far it goes up the food chain, while other studies have found them in top predators like tuna. So, yeah, they're everywhere.
Well, let's talk about now, given that there is such widespread threat of plastics and microplastic pollution, what recommendations are out there to address the issue? So, Farron, let's start with you. What is it? What kinds of recommendations are you making?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the best thing we can do to stop the spread of microplastics is look at upstream solutions. If we stop creating so many plastic products, we can stop plastic from becoming waste in the first place, then it won't become microplastics and it won't impact our environment. Every year, Americans generate 35 million tons of plastic waste, which is just an enormous, enormous number. And because that's waste, it has to go somewhere, whether it's a landfill, an incinerator, whether a small amount is recycled or it's getting littered straight in our environment. In any case, it's becoming microplastics that harms our wildlife and our health. So the best thing we can do is create less of this waste. There are things like plastic bag bans or other restrictions on single-use plastic products where we have easy alternatives that we can transition to that aren't made of plastic and don't create waste. Already, we've seen 24 communities all around Pennsylvania take action to reduce single-use plastics. These laws cover about 18% of our state's population and are eliminating thousands of tons of single-use plastic waste every year. But that's only a dent in the problem. There are other steps we can take too, whether it's decreasing our reliance on fast fashion. A lot of clothing these days are made from synthetic materials that will break down into microplastic fibers. And a lot of the times, these clothes, we don't wear them that often. They break down or wear out very quickly. So if we can get sturdier clothing, if we can reduce our reliance on these less sustainable clothing options, or if we don't send as much clothing to the landfill every year, that's one way of doing it. There are a ton of solutions out there, from better recycling to filters on our washing machines to try and capture some microfibers. But this is a huge, huge problem. There's no real silver bullet solution that's going to solve all of it. So we kind of need to take a multi-pronged approach and attack it from a bunch of different angles to try and stop these microplastics from getting into our environment.
One of the items in the report also talks about developing green infrastructure. Can you address that as well?
Yeah. Because we are looking at our rivers, our streams, our creeks, one pathway for microplastics to pollute them is through stormwater runoff or other runoff into these waterways. If we can create sort of green infrastructure, ways to capture rainwater or to capture stormwater to stop it from going directly into our waterways, then we can decrease the amount of microplastics flowing into them, because a lot of car tires are made from synthetic rubber and they become microplastics, which end up on our roads. There are other plastics that get littered in our streets, our parks, our open spaces. And when it rains, a lot of that plastic and microplastic gets washed into our waterways. So having ways to trap the runoff, to stop it from reaching our waterways, can be an effective way of managing the litter, managing the pollution, and decreasing the microplastics that enter the environment.
One of the other items in the report as a recommendation is also to eliminate Pennsylvania's current preemption on local action to address plastic pollution. Could you expound on that as well?
Sure. A couple years ago, as part of the state's budget proceedings, a preemption law, a ban on local plastic bans was passed. Penn Environment, along with the city of Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, several other municipalities like Westchester, Lower Merion, Narberth, and another organization, the Clean Air Council, sued the legislature over this preemption. Preemption was allowed to expire at the end of 2021. So that authority to pass single-use plastic laws, the authority to actually tackle this problem at the local level, went back to our cities, our boroughs, our townships, even our counties. And since then, there's really been an explosion in action. I mentioned before, there are 24 laws tackling single-use plastics. The vast, vast majority of them have passed since that preemption was allowed to end the end of 2021. So now that we've given this tool back to our local leaders, they've really stepped up and are working to put a dent in this problem.
Is there anything else that could be done from either our listeners from the public perspective, talking again with state legislators, et cetera?
Yeah, definitely. Individual action can be a key driver of some of these other larger actions. You can talk to your local council members or commissioners, your local government, to see if they will take action too. So far, no one in the Lehigh Valley, to my knowledge, has passed a law restricting the use of single-use plastics. And that's a really good first step on tackling this problem. You could talk to your state representative or state senator, your members of the U.S. Congress as well, to try and get action taken at a larger level, not just on single-use plastics, but on fast fashion or other types of plastic too. There are also changes you can make in your daily life, reducing your own reliance on single-use plastics, making sure that you try and use natural fibers in your clothing instead of synthetic. But it's really hard in your life as an individual to avoid plastic, to avoid every source of microplastics, which is why it's really important to make your voice heard and try and get change made at a systemic level.
Well, let me turn to John. So vis-a-vis the studies you've undertaken and the discoveries you've made, changes you've witnessed in the various waterways which you've studied over the years, what recommendations would you make?
Just very similar to the recommendations that Farron has just made. Microplastics, since they're everywhere, we're not going to get rid of them in the environment. I mean, there may be some possible ways to eventually digest them through with bacteria or some other methods to remove them. But I think we have to acknowledge that what's in the environment now is likely here to stay, because we find them in the sediment. We find them in the water column. We find them in the organisms. So what we need to do is reduce the amount of plastic that's getting into the environment. Everything that Farron just said, absolutely. You know, if from a marine perspective, there's a lot of work being done to remove macroplastics from the ocean, such as the great, you know, the great garbage patch that has this large amount of plastic floating in the ocean, and we find plastic floating in the ocean everywhere. So there's undertakings to remove that plastic. So that's very good, but we really need to stop adding plastic into the environment. That's the best thing we can do right now.
So Farron, do you have any last thoughts?
I think it's just important to take heart that it may sound a lot of doom and gloom that plastic is everywhere, that it's difficult to remove microplastics in our environment, that there are so many different pathways for them to harm our wildlife and harm our health. But we have solutions if we take steps, and communities are stepping up and taking these steps forward. We can tackle the problem. We can reduce our reliance on plastic. We can stop plastic getting into the environment and eventually stop the flow of microplastics that are harming wildlife, that are harming our health, and hurting the environment itself.
John, any last thoughts?
No, I absolutely agree. There are many things we can do to reduce the flow of plastics in the environment. We know the solutions. We just have to get our policymakers to enact changes. We need to make really simple behavioral changes in our own personal lives. But there are many things we can do. So yeah, it's not all doom and gloom. There are still solutions and things we can do.
My guests have been Farron Savitz, Zero Waste Advocate with Penn Environment Philadelphia, and Dr. John Sigliano, Director of Environmental Conservation at Cedar Crest College, discussing the recently released report on microplastics in Pennsylvania, a survey of Pennsylvania waterways. A copy of the report can be found at pennenvironment.org. Thank you both for joining me and for your candid remarks.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thank you.
This is Karen Elchar. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in to WDIY. Tune in next Thursday for more Lehigh Valley Discourse, and we'll see you next time on the Elchar Chronicles. you enjoyed this program, please go to wdiy.org or the WDIY app to share or become a WDIY member.